that the Lord would bring to memory when Steve asked for us to get to, I knew I was going to have a hard time this morning. But it was when Steve asked us to get down on our knees, and all of a sudden the Lord started to remind me of these points of interaction. When I agree, or whether the circumstances bring me to the position that I'm brought to my knees. And I might not physically be in that place. I've been in that place a number of times. But when your heart is brought to its knees, and you, all of a sudden, you're in the weakest place possible before the Lord. And it's almost like this is where he begins his prayer. Because for me, everything in this work, in the fountain of tears, has its beginnings within these points that physically, emotionally, you're brought to a place of what you would feel then total weakness. But then it becomes this dialogue, this interaction with the Lord, that he creates key words then in your life that become markers. See, for me, the marking word of everything to do with the fountain of tears, that was, it was a process of 7 years. Like, I related it a little bit on Wednesday night, that the first year, I tried everything I could possibly do to push it away. But the beginning word was a prophetic word that I happened to be at a conference at in 2001, and the name of the conference was Payback. Even this morning, even in the announcements, it's like all of a sudden I realized that Purim is this Wednesday. It was exactly on Purim that I got this prophetic word about Payback in 2001. I'm at a conference in England. It's a friend of mine, Graham Cook. He was then in Southampton, and he had asked me to come to this conference. And the name of the conference was Payback. I had been 2 years previous going to Graham's conference in Southampton. Him and I had met a few years before that. He was very drawn to the communication within art, within the sculpture, which was really fantastic, because he ended up buying about, over the years, he ended up buying about 30 pieces of sculpture. Graham's a little extreme, which I really like. He brags that he has the largest collection on the planet, because when he moved his offices, basically, and came to California, that instead of having all the sculpture shipped, he gave it away and he reordered all the pieces. I love Graham, it's great. But he's incredibly generous, and that he would invite me to Southampton it was like 2 years in a row after he began to buy the work, and he would say to me, I'm going to give you extra money because for shipping, but it was like way a lot. And he said, apply this to a ticket because I really want you to come to this particular. Came to the year of 2001, and Graham had sent me like an email and said that I'm doing my conference this year. The name of the conference is Payback. And I'm like, you know, Graham is a prophetic teacher. And most of the prophetic personalities that I've known over the years, they're all a little eccentric. And that's like being really generous. And I'm thinking, why would you call a conference Payback? But it's Graham, so it's got to be outside of the box. But it didn't really matter, because I had to email him back, and I said, listen, I'm really sorry, But I'm right in the middle of a project for this university, which happened to be the first Gethsemane piece I was working on. And I'm tensely into this and I can't come. I just don't have time. The moment I said that, the next day having a quiet time, I felt the Lord pressing me and saying, I want you to go to this conference. And again, you know, it's this, Lord, but I don't have time. I'm in the middle of doing this whole thing. And it's, but he kept pressing. And so I respond because I want to. I struggle within my own nature and I get focused on something I'm doing that I feel like, well, I'm doing this for you. Everything is for you. But this is inconvenient. So let's not, you know, so you start to, like, it's stupid. It's really stupid. But I respond. And so I sent a message off to Graham and I said, oh, you know, because I'd already told him I was really sorry he couldn't come. I'm going to come. He's like, great. I show up and just like Graham, it's like, in the sanctuary of where this conference is going to be, he has all my sculpture that he's bought all set up in different places, and he's done it really nice. Carol, his secretary then, he immediately gets me in the beginning, and he sort of ushers me into the office, puts me with Carol, and he says, I know this didn't take a lot of prophetic depth, but he said, I know you're inept as a businessman. Carol's going to set up order sheets because he said, I'm going to call you up during the conference because I want everybody here to know that you're the sculptor of this work so that they can order. And I'm like, he's incredibly generous. It's like, so I end up going through all of these preliminary things. And you're at the conference. I knew all the worship band guys, all of this. Thursday night, the conference starts. And it's like the worship, there's all this like buzz and energy going on. And the worship is like soaring. And again, okay, I'm an artist, but as a sculptor, you're less emotional, say, than a painter, and like way, way less than a poet. My youngest son calls poets meadow jumpers. And it's like, if you think about it, it's a fantastic description. Sculptors, generally, you suffer with your work. There isn't hardly a piece I've done that I haven't bled over. Because you're always cutting yourself on stuff. And it's really hard work. You carry most of the residue of that day's work on you on the way home, at least until you get to the shower. And it's sometimes for me also coming out of the background of Israel. Your emotions are not easily surrendered. You deal with a lot of intense stuff within the country. You have to be able to hold your emotions. But I'm feeling something in the worship the first night of this conference. And I'm feeling something going up. And it's like, this is a nice feeling. And I'm trying to hold on to this. And the music is soaring, and then all of a sudden it completely shuts down. Graham goes to the front, takes the microphone, and he says, this is the year of payback. This is the year of unprecedented grace and favor. This is the year that I am going to pay back everything that has been ravaged against you. Everything that the locust has taken from you, I am now going to restore. I'm going to pay back. And I'm in the audience, And there's about 500 people, and I'm listening and I'm thinking, this is really a nice word. Nice word, Gray. And it's like, but I'm not being touched emotionally by this word, because I'm thinking to myself, there's got to be within this audience a number of people that have probably in their past been cut, been wounded somehow. And now the Lord is addressing this area, and now he's going to touch this area in their lives. And I'm like, this is really a nice word, but it's not for me. And I'm like, and I'm trying to be like a good believer and say, Lord, I pray for these guys that are like wounded, that this word applies to, that they get healed, that get fully restored. But like, can we go back to the worship? Because the worship was really good, and it felt like you were sort of going somewhere. So we do. We go back to the worship, and it just sort of like becomes normal. The next day of the conference, Graham calls me up. We do this dialogue up front, and it's like a normal day of conference with lots of teaching and talking and interacting and all of this stuff going on. The second night of the conference, again, worship is the focus. And again, I'm feeling something going on. And I'm like, oh, Lord, this is feeling like you, and it feels like we're going someplace with this. And again, all of a sudden, it was like somebody pulled the plug. All the music dies. It goes into total silence. Graham walks out slowly, picks up the mic, and he goes, this is the year of payback. This is the year of unprecedented grace and favor. This is the year that I am going to restore. And he's giving the word verbatim of what he had given the night before. And I'm like, I'm listening to the word, but I'm having a harder time like being, like having a good attitude, say. And but in my mind, I'm going, Graham, come on. It's like, this is exactly the same word you said the night before. Like the guys that really needed this word, they could like get a cassette or something. And it's like, so I'm like, I'm having a bad attitude, but I'm also disconnecting from him sharing this word. And so I'm like, you know, like again, like you're being a little kid. You're sort of like, okay, I'm just going to wait till he finishes and maybe let's go back to worship. So you're totally self-centered. And in the moment that I'm disconnecting, all of a sudden Graham shifts. And he changes the wordage. And he said, this is not to you personally. And again, he's talking to 500 people in the audience. He's not even looking at me. And it's like, this is not to you personally, but this is for the people. This is for the people that I have attached you to. The moment he said that word, like I can never describe. It was like something was coming right at me. I got hammered. It was like getting hit by a truck. I exploded. And this is totally not me. I exploded into tears. This was not just, you're trying to resist the emotion. You're feeling an emotion. You can feel the tears coming. And you're trying to hold back this thing so you just don't lose it completely. Forget it. I was gone. I'm sobbing. I felt like all the air in the room instantly got sucked out, and I'm having a hard time breathing. I had to sit down. I couldn't stand up. I am just sobbing. I feel like I've been hit by a wave. I'm upside down in the water. I can't breathe, but I don't know what is up and what is down. And I'm crying out inside to myself within this moment because I am dismantled completely. And I'm like, Lord, what is going on? What is this? All of a sudden, I felt like the Lord broke in and he said to me, payback for the Jewish people, payback for the Jewish people is 6 million. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't even have, within the state, I didn't have the ability to put together a clear thought because I'm so overwhelmed with this moment. But I realized the one thing that tangibly connects to my thinking a little bit is that the number 6 million is the Holocaust. It's the Holocaust. And I'm like, Lord, this is like, I don't have any idea what's going on with me emotionally within this moment, but I can't, this is the Holocaust. How do I touch this? And in a sense, it doesn't matter how I touch it. I'm being touched by the emotions of the Lord with the tears of the Lord, which... Now I can say that at that moment, I didn't have a clue what was going on. I was so far outside of my grid, there was no grid. And I'm still in this position, and it's like I'm not saying anything, and then all of a sudden the Lord comes again. And he said, I'm going to bring into the kingdom 6 million for what was ravaged against them. I'm like, Lord, I don't even know. In Israel, there all the terms, you never use the term evangelism, you never use the term missionary. It's like all these numbers, lots of people have numbers that they'll float around as these projections. It's not in my grid. It's not in my ability to think these things. And I'm like, I don't have a clue what's going on. I don't have a clue what the communication is. I know it's the Lord. I absolutely know for sure that this is the Lord. I know, and I'm saying to the Lord, because all of a sudden it starts to subside and I'm starting to relax, but I'm exhausted. And I have no idea what has been laid on my plate in front of me. And I'm like, Lord, the Holocaust is a place filled with darkness and only questions. How in the world do I approach this? And I shared on Wednesday portions of the process working its way up until the fountain, until touching. And people will ask, how many years did it take you to do this? And I always say 7 years. But I always emphasize the first year of the 7 years, I did everything possible to push it away. I wasn't asking the Lord for confirmation because I didn't want a confirmation. I wanted it to go away. The thing that freaked me the most was the very next day of this conference. And you're talking, this is Graham's conference. There's nothing to do with Israel. The interesting thing that I had thought before going, it felt exactly on the time of Purim. Exactly, which is the story of Esther, which is the story of Haman, that was an ancient Hitler. And the whole birthing of an intercession, of Esther being positioned before the king to bring this intercession and this place of salvation to this people, then, within that time frame, within that projected Holocaust towards them. And I thought, there's so much stuff here, but there's so much, I can't carry this. I'm trying to avoid people, but because Graham's introduced me at this thing, oh, you're the sculptor from Israel. And I'm thinking, oh, I got it. I love Christian Zionists on one hand, and on the other hand, I have a real difficult time. But I'm like, I'm trying to avoid people because I'm in this trying to examine what in the world was that interaction. And it's like the very next day, a woman who had been playing violin as a part of the worship band, I knew everybody in the worship band except this woman. She's up there playing her violin. And I'm thinking, oh, Lynn Schwalt, who was the head of the worship band, I was thinking, Lynn is really generous. She's letting this woman, she's probably learning how to play the violin. You can't hear her anyway, because Lynn's like serious rock and roller. And it's like, and that's all that I connected to this violinist up there. But I'm trying to get out of the church. It's lunchtime. The next thing, I'm trying to get out, and I'm thinking, I don't want to see anybody. I have to go be by myself. And I'm working my way, and you know how you just like, people are looking at you, but then you like glance off, and you just don't do eye contact. Because then they're about, you know, like, no, deflect. And I'm trying to work my way through, and all of a sudden, this violinist, like, gets right in front of me. And she said to me, my name is Ruth Fizell. I play the violin. I'm going, oh, yeah, you're the one that I saw up on stage. She said, you're the artist from Israel, right? And I go, yeah, I'm him. And I'm thinking, oh, no, she's going to be one of these Christian Zionists. She's going like, oh, when is the third temple going to be built? And is there the red heifer in position now to move in? And do you only eat hummus every day, you know? And I make homemade hummus at home and have whatever, you know? And I'm like, I don't want to go there. And it's like, she said, can I talk to you? And I'm like, oh, I don't really want to talk to you. I want to go be by myself. But I felt like I should somehow. So I did. For the next 2 hours, she talks to me about creating an oratorio, which, again, classical music. I didn't have a clue what an oratorio was. The only English word that I had in my vocabulary was Oreo, that was even close. And I'm thinking, she's not talking about cookies. But I'm thinking, if I let her talk long enough, I'll figure it out without having to reveal my ignorance too fast. I'm really good about not revealing my ignorance too fast. Sometimes I trip. But she starts to tell me about this piece of classical music as this violinist that she's writing, that for the last year and a half she was beginning, and it was based on poetry of Jewish children from the Holocaust. And I'm like, oh, mercy. It was so powerful. I sat and I listened, and the thing that kept hitting me was, this is so clean. This is so clean. She had asked for the heart of the Father. And she said she didn't know anything about Israel. Nothing. Zero. Like, maybe not dumb as dirt, but really close. But I mean, knew nothing, which in a sense, in her responding to the Lord, in writing this incredible piece of music, it was like, it was so clean because it was so him. She didn't know anything. There were no projections, no agendas, no anything. It was purely a response to his heart. I loved it. I loved listening to her. I never said one single word about what I had gotten from the Lord the night before. Because I'm thinking, if I speak this out loud, it might happen. And I don't even know what it is, but I don't want it to happen. That I knew for sure. I go home. It took me almost 3 days. Because Daphna wants, we always, when I get back, we check out an entire day. We drink tea all day and talk. All the details, what happened with you, what happened with me, all of these things while I was gone. These are great days. And every single time I tried to tell her, I completely broke down. She's like, this is your wife, and you're breaking down. And she's not used to seeing me, like, totally break down. And she's like, what in the world happened? What happened to you? And I go, I don't know. But these are the chunks of information. This is the Lord. And I just said to the Lord, if this is a creative process, if this is a beginning to a creative process, first of all, it scares me like crazy. I don't mind you drawing my attention to a topic, and it's a beginning point of creating a piece. But when you bring me into a beginning point of getting my attention with this much emotion, it totally unnerves me. And it's like, you're silly. Like, you got really silly for about the first couple weeks going home. I avoided having a quiet time. I always gave excuses that I had too much to do that day or there were more important things because I was afraid he was going to bring it up. And I went through this entire year of avoiding and then the Lord bringing it in. And I related portions of this on Wednesday until finally the dilemma, the whole thing came to a head by me saying to the Lord, Lord, how in the world do I create a memorial to 6 million when I don't have memory? When Graham spoke the word out and said, this is not to you personally, but this is to the people that I have attached you to, I know absolutely without a doubt, not a bit, that the Lord has been the one that's attached me to Israel. I know that for sure. That being the trigger word. But me, I know that I'm not Jewish. I don't have a history. I don't have anybody in my family history that went through the Holocaust. And I said to the Lord, how do you create a memorial if you don't have memory? There's not a beginning point. There's nothing there for me to draw on to even start, because he promises that you'll see in part. Even though you might look at it through a smoky glass, he gives you a part, a beginning point. And I said to him, I'm Canadian. From a national point of view, geographically, if I'd have been born in France or Holland, I would have had a national memory of the Holocaust. But I don't. I don't have a beginning point. And it was like, I felt good. I felt good with that argument. I felt like I can now walk away from this because that is probably one of the most reasonable statements I've ever made. And I was really happy with myself. within that moment of self-satisfaction, praise God, he doesn't let us live there too long, the Lord spoke three words. He said, but I do. I have a memory of every child, every man, every woman, every cry from every cattle car, every scream from every gas chamber. I have a memory of it all. You create from my memory, not from yours. And the whole process began. But the birthing was the payback word. It became the marker. It became that point of eruption of tears. It started within that promise. I look at it now within that same conference. Graham, you know, the conference ends. I'm not speaking of this to anyone. But Graham grabs me at the end of the conference, and it's all this hubbub, and everybody's happy. You know, it was a great conference. They're all leaving. And he ends up pulling me off to the side, and he has a couple who are there. They're from California, Napa Valley, actually. And he introduces me to them. And his name was Tim. And he said, Tim has an idea that he wants to relate to you. And I go, okay. And he starts talking to me about a lion. And I'm like, and it, honestly, for me, I was so distracted within this conversation because I'm still trying to deal with this payback, with these emotions, all this stuff. It was so heavy on me. It was hard to, like, carry on a normal pretend conversation, say. And it was like, he wanted to commission a piece of sculpture. And I'm like, I usually take it really serious. Because there isn't a lot of people out there that come up to you and actually want to commission a piece of work. And so you take it serious. But I was completely distracted. And he's talking to me about a home that they're buying, and they have this large wall, and he's points of referencing within the church, you know, and I'm thinking, is this vertical more? Is it more horizontal? And he's talking about a lion. And I'm sort of listening and sort of not. And he can't be real clear, and I'm thinking, he's telling me Trafalgar Square lions, which I love the lions at Trafalgar Square. They're really majestic. They're massive, big bronzes. They're fantastic. But they're horizontal. And the shape he's giving me is vertical. So I just said, okay. So I took his phone number, put it on a scrap piece of paper, and off I went. And I thought, whatever, we'll just see. End up going back. I go back to Canada. At one point with Daphna, we're doing this work, and it's a number of months going by, and the Lord keeps bringing more and more of these suddenlies in. And now I'm meeting with Ruth in Toronto. She's inviting me to this conference that then erupted into the whole sense of the crucifixion and the Holocaust coming together within that moment. If you want to get all the details of that, you got to get the book, all right? It's back there on the table. So this, actually, the book for me is a relief. So I don't have to get into all the details. Anybody wants to get the details, they can get the book. I never thought about the lion. And through the miracle of the Lord and my mass disorganization, I happen to have this phone number. still. And they had said to me, when you're back in the States the next time, call us. So I phoned them up thinking, I'm not even sure if they're still there. It's been 6 months at least in between this. And Darlene, the wife, picks up the phone. She goes, Rick, great to hear from you. How's it going with the lion? And I'm like, oh, it's bad that Robbie's here right now. Because the lion and lion, sometimes there's, it gets. And I'm like, the lion's, it's good. You know? And I'm like, what am I gonna like? When are you coming out? Show us the drawings. We'll send you tickets. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And I'm thinking, wow, they're really serious. They're actually going to spend some money. Send me tickets to come out. And so I'm thinking, okay, the lion is good. And I said, okay, we'll be in touch. And I ended up starting to have to now engage myself into, what in the world did he actually say to me at this conference? What was he looking for? Was it Narnia lion? Was it Trafalgar Square lion? It was a blur of a couple words that I wasn't paying attention to at the time. Now I'm going, how much time do I have now? Because you promised 15 minutes the other thing. Am I okay? It's okay? Daphne's not here, so when I get close to the time thing, somebody's got to do the itchy neck thing, all right? They call me, right? So we end up with this dialogue, and all of a sudden, the lion is becoming an issue. But I want you guys to really get this. Because I mean the struggle with payback. I'm in North Carolina at the same time we've met Ruth up in Toronto. We've driven down to North Carolina because we're working on another piece for this church. And she has said to me, come down to South Carolina to this conference, because her and Gary Weens are doing this whole thing called the Seven Last Words, which I didn't have a clue what that was. But again, I do well at not revealing too fast my ignorance. And that's when the Lord combining, it was the beginning of the combining of the crucifixion and the Holocaust together, which was, again, a suddenly of the Lord, but it was so terrible. It was so scary and hard, and I did not want to go forward again. There's this constant struggle of knowing you have to respond because this has been your covenant with Him. Within that moment of salvation, you have created a covenant that is so much tighter. It is like, you can't go back on it. He is Lord. You're here to serve Him. He is not there to provide all of your Christmas lists and your whims. And you can be guaranteed that when you respond to Him, it's going to cost you. You are going to have to die to stuff within your nature and your whole cultural way of thinking will rise up and oppose the will of the Lord. And I so hate it when His word falls to the ground. Because we will allow His words to fall to the ground based on these childish arguments. I know. I've argued lots of these things with Him. I don't like to die. When you start, it's an issue that when you don't like to die, that's one thing, your argument. But when you, in a response to him, have to put your wife in a position of, severe danger towards your children, where in a sense, the next step of obedience that you're about to embark on that you know is him, and you know you have to respond, it goes past just you dying in the process. It's like you're having to give them over to a serious possibility of death, which that was joining the settlement. That's in the book too. But it has to be a principle, because when you get to the point that you think you've gone as far as you can possibly go in what you're able to give over to the Lord, he'll surprise you and say, no, no, no. There's another portion of the land that needs some conquering here. He's fantastically kind. He's incredibly generous. As a father, he knows your weaknesses, and he will gently woo you in, but there is a line in the sand that he will draw the line. And you don't want to be found on the other side of the line. He'll find somebody else to fulfill his will. He will. Because he wants his kingdom to go forward within this earth, and he cannot just keep speaking to a person that has systematically closed his ears to listening. Because the more the Father speaks to a person that refuses to listen to him, it heaps more judgment on the individual. And so the Father, in a sense, out of kindness, he doesn't talk anymore. He will not talk to the child anymore, because it's like, it's only doing more damage to the child. So be found on the right side of the line, even if it costs you everything. This whole sense of the lion, I start to then go into a place of sketching, because I'm thinking, it didn't like totally, absolutely lie. But I better quickly start to do something now, because you justify it. You're the artist. So it's like, I always have creative stuff floating around in my head. So of course there's, for sure there's a lion there. There has to be a Lion of Judah, and you're in Israel. That is a no-brainer for sure. But I'm thinking, I don't have a clue what these guys are looking for. I go to the local library, and you're talking, this is also the grace of the Lord. You go to a library in North Carolina, all right? And I walk in, and I'm looking for maybe pictures of lions or something, right? I go through this whole section, and there's a whole section on Israel. And I'm like, whoa, okay. Well, I'm just going to float in there. And there's this picture book about Israel, pictures from Israel. I'm thinking, oh, okay, so I'm looking through. I know most of the places. But all of a sudden, there's this picture of the Trafalgar, Trumpeldor's lions. I don't know if you've, probably most people haven't heard about it, but Trumpeldor was in the very beginning of the nation, and he's famous. It's written on his tombstone, Tov lamut ba'ad altsenu. Good for us to die for our country. And I was like, and they have these two stone lions in the northern part of Israel at a memorial place for him specifically. And they're cut out of a very hard stone, so they're simplistic in a sense in the design. But the head is back, and it's roaring upward. And I'm like, oh, I like this. I like these lions. I grab the book, and it's like, I love the beginning history of Israel anyway. And it's like, and so I'm doing sketches based on the stance of the lion. That it's vertical, it's going up, it's almost, I didn't want it to be a Jerusalem lion standing on its legs. I wanted him solidly sitting, but everything going vertical. And it's like, I start doing the drawings on this lion, and it's like really happening. And I'm totally in the zone, right? And I'm doing sketches, and in the mane of the lion, I start to see things within the drawing. And I'm doing these sketches, and I'm seeing elements within the mane that is like, it's got things to do with the crucifixion of Jesus, which was like, it hadn't even happened then. It hadn't even happened. It was the lion is the first piece I ever did that has the crucifixion of Jesus and the Holocaust interwoven into it. In the next part, in my 15 minutes in the next part, we're going to show pictures of the details within the mane. All right? But I mean, there was stuff happening for sure. There was definitely an interaction with the Lord within the sketching, and there were all these things going on in this lion. And I'm like, I'm thinking 12 stones, the lion's positioned on 12 stones. This is a cry of the heart. The whole position of the intercession over the Holocaust is the mane that goes over the heart of the lion. And the cry is going upward. The roar is going upward within the lion. And I'm like, this is great. This is like, I am so like, wow, I love this drawing. And I'm thinking, the 12 stones, the 12 tribes, it's all, everything's going upward. And I'm like, whoa. And I did all these sketches. And I'm thinking, any idea what they really want, this couple in California. But I'm thinking, I don't really care. This is it. This is it. They, you know, they're flying me out. Yeah, you know, I'd been there a couple times before, but I'm thinking it's nice. You're going out for a few days. I'm going to show them the drawings. And a lot of times, if you're working on a commission and you're not quite sure what's going on, you'll do a couple of different possibilities, say. I'm thinking, I'm not doing any other possibilities. This is it. If they don't like it, I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway. I have to. I feel the Lord so on this that it's like, I'm doing the lion whether they like it or not. I end up getting flown out there. Darlene picks me up at the airport, Sacramento, drives me back to the house. Tim, who's the businessman, and lots of business guys that I've met over the years are like straight to the point. Artists don't get a lot of chance to tell too many stories around them because they just get to the point. Stop with all the details. Just tell me what the bottom line is. Tim comes in, big guy. And he's like, he's finished his day's work, and he's like, okay, let me see these drawings. And I'm like, oh. I'm going to roll the lion out on this big dining room table, and they're going to look at it, right? And I'm thinking, this is like, oh. And I'm feeling the intimacy of this lion and the drawing. And I'm like, okay. They roll it out. And I decide to back away. I'm just going to let them look at it. And I can hear like these little grunt sounds and body positioning and all this stuff, right? And then Tim comes over to me and he says, you know what? He says, this is so not what we wanted. And he goes back over, and he's looking at it again, and he's there for a few minutes, and he comes back, and he says, you have no idea what you have here. I go, okay, talk to me. And he says, this isn't even close to what we were thinking. But he says, this is absolutely it. You have no way of knowing. But he said, 2 weeks ago, on a deathbed interaction with an aunt, he discovered that he was Jewish. Wow. Never known it before. And through pressing it, probably the conclusion that he would have never found out was a lot of Jews leaving after the Holocaust out of Europe decided to go to America and bury their Jewishness. We are no longer Jews. And in a sense, it all starts to connect. And he's freaked out. I'm a little freaked out but happy. And the lions started to then move into a whole creating thing that was happening. This lion that is here within Jubilee, it's different. There's just a little bit of difference to it. And in the second part, I'm going to talk about it. All right? Am I okay? All right, good.
Very good. Thank you, Rick. Thank you. I'm looking forward to that. How about you? Just before we transition...